Kettlebell Drangar, Happy New Year. I hope that 2023 brings you much happiness, riches, honor, and glory. You can find all of these by signing up for the 2023 Twin Cities Kettlebell Open. Registration is available now at twincitieskettlebellclub.com/TCKBOpen2023. Register today. We will be back at the Athlete Lab in Little Canada, Minnesota on Sunday, October 14th, and accepting video submissions for online competitors. There will again be raffle prizes for all registered competitors and the opportunity to win cash prizes for the top performances in the competition. Come, answer the call of battle. Join us and fight for your clan. Fight for yourself and claim your spoils and your glory. Let's make 2023 the most epic year yet. And may your name forever ring out in the Hall of Champions. Sign up today at TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com. Welcome to the Platform Podcast, where we talk to coaches, athletes, experts, and real people to learn about their approaches to training, nutrition, mindset, and much more. I'm your host, Jordan Kundi Wright, founder and head coach of the Twin Cities Kettlebell Club, and I'm on a mission to help others build sustainable, healthy lifestyles. Before we jump into this episode, I want to remind you that registration is live for the third annual Twin Cities Kettlebell Open on October 14th, hosted by our friends at the Athlete Lab in Little Canada, Minnesota. And the price is now $70 for early bird registration. Just go to our website, TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com/TCKBOpen2023 to register. On this week's episode, it is our 100th episode. And in what I think is a beautiful act of symmetry, I was able to get some time with my very first kettlebell sport athlete. Her name is Sarah Fornero. She is an incredibly accomplished lifter, and if you've ever seen her knock out a triathlon in competition, you know that she is incredibly tough, incredibly focused, and very competent at all three lifts. And it is a lot of fun talking to her. I go a little bit off the rails, as I tend to do, but I hope you guys enjoy the episode. And of course, I'm grateful that you listen to this podcast, and the best way you could support me is to sign up for the Twin Cities Kettlebell Open and see Sarah lift in person, come lift with her, and meet me in person, and maybe tell a friend or two, bring your team. Just go to our website, TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com, for details. And of course, I would very much appreciate it if you would leave a 5-star rating and review of the Platform Podcast on your app of choice, as that helps us spread the word and for new people to find this podcast. Of course, if you want help reaching your goals without wasting time, reach out to me. Fill out the coaching interest form linked in the episode notes. I help athletes of all levels using my integrated coaching approach. You can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Twin Cities Kettlebell Club, or email me at TwinCitiesKettlebellClub@gmail.com. Now, without further ado, let's step onto the platform with Dr. Sarah Fornero. All right. Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome into the first episode of the Platform Podcast in 2023. And it also happens to be episode number 100. And because of that, and I'm such a nerd that I love symmetry so much, I had to bring on a very special guest for this interview. I've been waiting for a while to have her on. She is the very first kettlebell sport client I ever had in the history of my coaching career. Her name is Dr. Sarah Fornero. Thank you very much for coming on, Dr. Sarah.
Thanks, Jordan. Happy to be here.
Should it be Dr. Samerica so we can differentiate between you and Dr. Sarah Canada?
Probably. It's my official name on all my business cards and everything.
Nice. So for people that don't know, I obviously know the answer to this question, but for people that don't know, what is your doctorate in and what is it that you do?
Okay. So my doctorate is in, technically it's in curriculum and instruction. But my area of expertise is online learning and learning with technology. So how do we use technology to improve learning environments, to augment the work we're doing? And then when I did research, it was on how do we create settings that optimize the success of online graduate students when they're never setting foot on a physical campus. And what I actually do these days is adjacent to all of that. I work in a nursery through eighth grade private school. And I oversee curriculum instruction. I partner with teachers for their learning and development. I teach a class once a day as well. So I'm in the classroom. And then everything else, that other duties as assigned category, is rather ubiquitous.
Other duties as assigned, also known as whatever your boss decides he needs from you that particular day, that particular moment.
Yep, that's the one.
Okay. So COVID, did you make that happen so that that would advance your career path? Or no, I know that's not true, but how was COVID for you? Were you still in the online curriculum development point at, when it started and then pivoted to this new role?
I was. So COVID was, I think it was a crazy time for everybody. Professionally speaking, I was at a university at that point in time, and I was responsible for online learning and for technology. And, you know, I remember going to a conference a few weeks before everything happened, and it was starting to come up, and I just came back and I said, hey, let's put together some contingency plans. We'll never need them. Just write them real quick for us. And, you know, we kind of half-assed that. And then before you know it, we're shutting down on a Thursday night and not sure if we're going to open it again. And I actually left that job before the school fully reopened, over a year and about a year and a half later. So I was in the thick of it there. And then I went to the in-person nursery through eighth grade setting. And one of my other duties as assigned was manage COVID.
Yes, I remember that period of time just being a little bit stressful for you when it's like getting text messages at 1 a.m. being like, we have X number of positive COVID tests today, or you're waiting for those results to come in every night so you could then communicate. I remember a few conversations with you about how stressful that was.
It was just, you know, a little bit of extra something.
Just a little bit on top of everything else.
Fortunately, that is not the current state of things, so I will take it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so people didn't come here to hear all about COVID. Nobody wants to relive that bullshit. So let's go back to the origin story a little bit. And I know how you got into kettlebell sport, but do you want to tell people how we met and how I somehow convinced you that this was a good idea?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is you, but we'll go into a little more detail there. People always say, like, how'd you get into this thing? And I'm like, well, I had this coach who liked kettlebells.
So this asshole and, walks up to me at a gym.
And, you know, he starts showing me something. He goes, you know, you can compete in this thing. And I'm like, huh? Okay, let's go. And the rest is history. But yeah, really, you were offering, I think it was a semi-private kettlebell class on Saturday mornings. And I said, why not? I was the only one there every time. So
true story.
There was that aspect. At that point in time, I was just enjoying going to a gym and working out and taking classes. I was probably training for a triathlon because I'm almost always training for a triathlon at some point during the year. But beyond that, nothing too specific in my training scope. And it worked. And then especially after I had some additional knee problems, it was something that I could keep doing, which was really great. And I think it was about a year or so full circle when you were training me. And then I finally entered a competition. And hey, here I am.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and for people that don't know, when you say a triathlon, you're not talking about like me, the craziness that I like, you know, convinced you was a good idea, which was triathlon for kettlebell. It was triathlon,
oh,
like run, bike, yeah. Swim, right?
All of the above. Yeah. So, running, swim, bike, run, those triathlons. I've been doing the Chicago triathlon since I moved to Chicago. So that's something that I want to be able to keep doing.
And why triathlons? Why did you decide to get into triathlons?
Yeah. So I was a swimmer growing up and I hated running. I played soccer and I was the goalie. There was a very specific reason that was my position. So running was not my favorite, and I wanted to do more competitive swimming, not in like a head-to-head race format, but like as a challenge for myself. And so I said, hey, why not a triathlon? I can run. Like, I don't crumble into a ball usually. But I figured, I know I can swim. I know I can bike. I know I can run. I'm going to try this thing. And I could. And so just kept doing those and used that to push myself on the running front for a while too, to like really see, could I get into running shape? And the answer was I could. I still didn't like it. So I still make myself run every so often just to make sure I can, but it's not necessarily something that brings me joy.
Okay. Fair enough. There's no joy in running for me either. I don't, people that enjoy running are just weird to me, but, you know, everyone's got their thing, I suppose. But, from my side, when you told me when we first met at Urban Athlete, and we got shout out to AJ and Nell at Urban Athlete, if they ever hear this, but, when you first told me at Urban Athlete in Chicago that you were a triathlon athlete, I was like, oh, she likes to suffer and she's got a big engine already. I was like, oh, she's going to be really good at this if she can move some weight. And then we got a couple of sessions in and I was like, okay, she can move some weight too. And then probably about 5 sessions in, I was like, she's going to be way better at this than I will ever be at this sport. So that I was right about that. What are your best results that you've ever achieved from a rank perspective?
From a rank perspective, I don't know if it was official, back when you could get a master of sport in a 5-minute set through, would have been, I think, WAKSC. I did a 5-minute 20-kilogram biathlon and hit master of sport numbers. For sure, officially, I've hit CMS in all of my lifts. With both 16s and 20 kilogram weights. So
nice. And do you consider yourself a specialist at any of the lifts, or do you consider yourself a generalist, or do you consider yourself a triathlonist? Like what, like when you think about what you would qualify yourself as for kettlebell, what would you say it is that you do if somebody asks you?
Yeah. I usually, I guess, classify myself as a triathlon athlete, because that's usually what I'm going to enter anytime there's a competition.
A few people. Why is that, Sarah? Why do you always sign up for as much as you can do?
Gotta get the bang for the buck. I'm not going to travel to lift for 10 minutes and go home. But I also like the challenge of having to balance your work across 3 sets. So, you know, it's one thing to be able to go all out in 10 minutes, but to go nearly all out, have the right way to recover and then do it again and then recover and to do it again, I think is a challenge that just really speaks to me more. It appeals to me. I also like all the different lifts. I love in my training being able to do all 3 lifts. And then when something's not working every so often, say my back is bothering me, or what else have I done over time? I think I, you know, hurt my hand at one point. I've bothered a shoulder here or there. My knees are known to kind of act up.
My one knee is just known to randomly tear, but I don't know.
I can switch and still keep lifting with bells and be working towards something, even if I can't work on everything. And that's actually been really helpful for me when I have had specific injuries while competing, to be able to pivot and not have to skip a competition, but alter my entry. So for instance, when I hurt my hand, I shifted from some double bell lifts to, I did one arm, 28 kilogram long cycle and jerk that competition instead with literally one arm. Cause why not? Like, I don't like to watch. I like to lift.
That's the fun of it, right? You don't just show up to be a spectator, unless you're like me and travel all the way to Canada just to spectate. But you know, that's neither that's neither here nor there. I was already signed up, and my doctor said doctors, and then what do they know? They're medical school training.
School forever.
Yeah, they just didn't want me to lift, so I didn't. But okay, so of the three lifts, if you had to pick a favorite. Right. Or we could fuck, marry, kill. Which one? You pick your lifts. Let's let's go. Yeah, we're going off the rails.
Wow. Okay. Let's see. I would marry jerk, kill long cycle, and bang snatch.
Interesting. That's I'm actually surprised. I thought long cycle was your first love. I thought you loved long cycle.
I've come to love jerk.
Oh, I know you love jerk now, but I always thought like long cycle was like the first one, but
no, to me like if you really want to feel like you died, you do a really fast mid to heavy weight long cycle set for 10 minutes. And then like, you might actually see what's beyond this life.
You leave your body for a little bit. You watch yourself finish the last couple of reps.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But you, in all seriousness though, you said you do actually like all three lifts. So what is it that you like about each lift?
With jerk, I like the power and the speed combined. I feel my strongest when I'm doing heavy jerk sets, especially when I can do those at a fairly quick pace. And they feel very repeatable. If my form is just right on each jerk, they're just floating, yet I still know I'm working.
So what is a quick pace and what is heavy for you? So just because I want people to, I know what these answers are, but I want people to know what the context is so that they understand what we're talking about from a pacing standpoint. Sure. And heaviness standpoint.
So if, for me, heavy jerks are 20 kilos and above. And I'd say fast pace there is 12 RPM and above. That is not my current comp pace, but hopefully one day. Otherwise, if I'm trying to just do something like fast, I'm doing 12 or 16 and trying to hit between 17 to 21 RPM, just to really feel that like pop, 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 pop.
Okay. Yeah, that'll do it. I mean, you're talking about weights and paces that would crush most male competitors, and then yet alone most female competitors. So you're pretty up there with what you consider heavy and fast. So that's, yeah, that's all I have to say about that. Now, what about snatch and long cycle? Like, what do you like about snatch? We'll start with that.
Snatch is probably always been my nemesis when it comes to lifts. It's the one that's been hardest for me to figure out. And I still have yet to complete a 10-minute 20 kilogram snatch set.
Really?
Yeah. And so it intrigues me in a lot of ways. I think you get to really push the cardio, which I enjoy. And then when you do hit that perfect rhythm, when the bell is literally floating from position to position and you're kind of just there to guide it along the way, I assume that's the equivalent of like a runner's high, but with snatch, right? Like you're just, it's working.
You're in the zone.
And so to me, that's the big challenge though. So I can hit really fairly smooth, high-paced sets with a 16, even with an 18. And then I get to the 20 and I've got to figure it out again. And so I like that continuous learning, because while yes, the technique should carry over, you do have to adjust and compensate for the weight of the bell and how that is interacting with your different motions, and what worked with one weight doesn't always transfer directly to the next. So to me, it's this like, I don't know, it's kind of like a treadmill, right? Like you never get off of it. You just have to keep
Oh, I get off the treadmill all the time. I just don't get on it in the first place, but that's again, neither here nor there. So give me an example of what you mean when you say there's certain aspects of your technique that don't always translate when you go to a heavier weight. So say you're going from a 16 to a 20, like what do you feel like doesn't necessarily always translate?
So I think grip strength would be one space. Just given the different weights of the bells, what my hand can manage, control, and power through with a 16 that it can't with a 20. That drop has to be just right. The backswing has to be to the peak point of, insert some scientific word here, I don't know, so that when it comes forward, it floats up and then I can do the pull and the insertion at the right time. Whereas with a 16, I can get away with more. I can go at a faster pace. My grip strength can kind of make up the difference in terms of holding on to the bell. I can counterbalance the weight in different ways that even if I don't feel like I'm actually hitting the technique right, I can still put up a high number of reps and complete the set.
So it's not like, it sounds like what you're saying is there's more margin for error with the lighter weights. And as you get higher up in the weights, the technique needs to be more precise and almost perfect. But is there aspects that need to change? Do you change angles, or do you change hand positions, or do you change your counterbalance strategy more, like leaning forward further and leaning back further?
And then the last one, I think definitely the counterbalance changes quite a bit with the heavier weights. And just then like the pace and the speed. So really making sure I've got like a paused, solid fixation at the top. I've always got to fixate, but actually holding it, making sure I'm in complete control before I start that next rep. Again, it goes back to that margin for error, but I would say then the counterbalance as well. Like, how am I using my body to control that weight without it controlling me?
Okay, and how many survival snatch reps do you tend to keep in reserve, do you think, on like a 16 versus a 20? Because that's another thing that I know with you, like you can, it's always impressed me how many reps you can gut out sometimes when I'm like, oh, her grip's done, she's got like 5 more, 10 more maybe. And then you're like 36 reps later, you've done a bunch of survival reps. What's the drop off there when you go on the 20s?
I think with 16s I could probably pull off 90 seconds, 30 reps with survival snatch. With the 20, I am lucky to have probably 7 to 10. That's high, probably, maybe closer to 5. And part of that too, though, is the way the weight of the bell on the impact at the top, right? When you're doing a survival snatch, there's much more of a flip over the top than there is a graceful insertion.
Yes.
That,
you get that flip and smash into the forearm. That can definitely rattle you a little bit, especially if you're not wearing your diapers. But you know. I always have to give Sarah a hard time about wearing her kettle guards. She never ceases to give me a hard time about how early on I was telling her she shouldn't wear wrist guards, which I have changed my position on as I've been a coach longer.
No. You were the one who gave them to me.
Yes, that
and
is
then
true.
Then you thought I shouldn't wear them, and then you changed your mind.
There's an arc to it. It is a good idea early on if you're banging your wrist really hard to not get an impact fracture. You never want to get hurt. But also, it can be a detriment to learning proper technique. But I went a little too far on the zealotry route of I just thought nobody ever really actually needs them. And that was a mistake. And I have since shifted. So especially when you have, a slighter frame than other people like me. I don't have a slight frame, so I've never quite understood when people are like, yeah, it bangs my wrist too hard, and I'm like, it's fine. But not everyone has big dinosaur bones like I do, so I get it. I get it. And long cycle, what is it about long cycle?
It's all the things together. Like I feel like I could do a bunch of jerk intervals and yeah, my heart rate will get up, but I can just pick up for the next set. But you do long cycle and it crushes your soul, like I was saying before, in this wonderful way. But like, it's the cardio, it's the strength, it's the clean's got to be just right so that you can go on to that jerk. But then thank God I get to clean the bells again, because that rack position was horrible on the last one, right? It's all the things combined and it really never lets up. There's very few places in long cycle that I feel like I can truly, I'm lying there. You can rest in a lot of places in long cycle, but I find if I rest too long, then I lose all the momentum. And so it's really just got to be keep going, going, going.
If you're going to hit your targets, you can't really rest anywhere too long. That is definitely true. Okay. So if you had to pick what you think your best performance ever was, was it the Hitting Master of Sport, or was it a 10 minute triathlon that you did somewhere?
I have to say it was the 10 minute triathlon I did in 2019 in Vegas. That was Allies of the Alloy, I think it was.
Sounds right.
Was Tony, Jessica, and one more person whose name I'm blanking on who are organizing it.
Moses or Michelle?
I don't think it was Moses. Michelle.
Michelle Latour?
No, it was a different, they were there, but it was someone else. I did a 10 minute, 20 kilogram triathlon. And that jerk set, that one was jerk snatch long cycle. I momentarily held a world record for jerks.
Momentarily. How long are we talking?
I don't know. I just know I don't have it anymore. So it's not a current record.
Was it Liga or Kim Fox? I feel like they have like pretty much all of them when it comes to double bell.
It was 111 reps, I think, in 10 minutes. And then I survived snatch. I remember that snatch set was nothing amazing, but it wasn't my worst. It was kind of like right in the middle where it should be. And then I was able to hit around, I think, 65 or 70 long cycle, which I was pleased with after everything else. So I think that was probably one of my top sets.
Nice. And what do you think is kind of the key to your strategy when it comes to triathlon? Does it differ every time depending on how you feel, or do you feel like you have kind of a consistent approach that you take to triathlon?
So what will vary is whether or not the order is fixed or if I have some say, because depending on the competition, they're done in different orders. I know a lot of times people think the traditional is jerk, snatch, long cycle. So it's like biathlon plus long cycle. I'd actually prefer it to be long cycle, jerk, snatch if it's 16 or lighter. And then jerk, snatch, long cycle for anything heavier. So that's one thing that's factoring into my mind. But really, I'm trying to hit my paces that I picked ahead of time as metronomically, is that a word?
Sure. Metronomically. Sure. We'll go with it.
Metronomically as possible. To really just follow the plan and then always have a backup plan and a backup plan so that I
have trained you well.
So that no matter what, I feel like I've hit a plan during the set and I know what I'm going to do on the next set. And if I don't hit any of the plans, it's always, I can just start over on this next set and go for that. In terms of pacing or anything like that, I do want to get really as many points as I can out of Jerk and then Long Cycle. I just know I have more gas in my tank, if you say, for Jerks, that I can just put up quite a few reps. You get 2 points per rep there. So I try and maximize that. I don't want to undercount Long Cycle because you get 3 points per rep on Long Cycle, but
it's harder to output 100 reps plus in Long Cycle. So there's a tipping mm-hmm. point there that's kind of tricky.
And then Snatch, it just really, it's on like go for whatever I can get out of it that day. It's 1 point per rep. I've got some numbers I'd probably like to hit, but as I've said before, it's also not usually my strongest lift. So,
and are you trying to preserve any grip strength or back strength or cardio? Like, because it's usually like no matter which order you go in, it seems like Snatch is always the middle lift. So are you, cause I've never seen a competition where you can just pick and do it in whatever order you want. I've never seen that. It's usually either Long Cycle goes first or Long Cycle goes last. I've never seen it where you can just pick, but, are you preserving grip or doing anything
last before?
Oh, have
I've
you
done Long Cycle Jerk Snatch? I think.
Oh. I've never seen that before.
I don't know. I could be completely wrong. I can't really remember. it depends. So I know that my back likes to lock up after Jerk and or Long Cycle. So I love having Snatch in between because I really feel like I can stretch out and loosen up in that way. Beyond that, I don't have many other pro tips other than just, you know, do what you planned.
Execute the plan, right?
Yeah.
I like that. What do you think your biggest strength is as a lifter?
When I'm in it, discipline and consistency.
What do you mean? When you're in it.
I'm in a little bit of like a hiatus with my training at the moment.
Oh, you mean training? I thought you meant in the set. I'm sorry. Okay, so you mean in training?
I guess.
Okay.
In training, being consistent in training, but then when I'm lifting, when I'm on the platform, it's executing very consistently, knowing how many breaths between reps, you know, what the number should be on the clock at all the different intervals, and really sticking to that, like. I'm a numbers person, so I'm constantly counting something, some way, some shape, some form, to know exactly where I am in the set and that I'm on pace and that what the next one should be like and when it should happen.
And I know you're very much a metronome lifter to your point. And what we mean when we say that is that she tends to do a very set pacing every 15 seconds or every 30 seconds that she's checking in the middle of every minute to know that she's hitting those. She tries to be very steady and consistent in her pacing. Do you count breaths most of the time or do you watch the clock most of the time? Or do you alternate depending on the lift?
Yes. So I have breath pacing for my rest position. So Long Cycle after the clean or Jerk when I've fallen into rack, I know there's a catch breath and then either 0, 1, or 2 breaths after that before my next breath occurs.
Yeah.
On Snatch, especially if I am doing heavier weights, I have a number of breaths that I want to take when I'm fixated. And that's probably my first focus. If things are feeling good, then I'm looking also at the clock to see, am I hitting the numbers that I want to be at? So am I trying to go 14 RPM on Jerk? So am I at 7 reps by 30 seconds or am I at 4 reps by 16 seconds? Then I'm, you know, going where I want to go. If I am not, then I make sure I'm hitting the breaths. I don't know if that tracks, but like if I'm like ahead of pace or something, I'm going to slow myself down. If I'm behind pace, I'm going to then focus on the breaths to make sure that I am executing the lifts correctly. So then I'm always adjusting so that it's never wrong. It's just right for what I need at that moment.
Do you ever panic do you ever feel like you lose your composure on the platform, or have you ever panicked on the platform?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Really? I don't think I've ever seen you panic on the platform. I've seen you get rattled, but I don't think I've ever seen you panic. You always seem, cause that was what I was thinking my answer would be to what your biggest strength as a lifter is you're always calm. You always, or at least you always appear calm. Maybe you're a duck on the water and inside the feeder going, you know, 1,000 miles an hour, but you always appear calm on the platform.
That's good to know. I can't think of the specifics. I know there's been a couple of times where things just weren't working. But usually then like I've got a plan for that. So like when things have fallen off the rails, it's to make eye contact with somebody I know someplace out in that space. And I've probably yelled at somebody before to like, look at me. and then use kind of like that external reinforcement to kind of get back to a place. So if I've, you know, if you're there or whoever's been my coach in the past has been there, it's like finding them and saying, you know, somehow telepathically trying to say, this isn't working. And then to figure out what the new plan is. I know in Canada up at Riddlestruck, you were helping me pace through a set and I just yelled a number out at you halfway through, said, we're switching it up.
And I was like, wait, what does she mean? I did not understand what you were communicating right away, but then I got it. It just took me a little bit to process what you were saying. I was like, wait, am I counting wrong? Did I get the count? That was where I went. I was like, wait, is my count wrong? Is she telling me I have the count wrong? I was like, oh no, she was saying she wants to change the pacing. Oh, okay.
So I don't know. There's always something that I'm going to try and do to get to that next place. And then if I ever do feel unsafe lifting the bells, I put them down. I've had enough sports related injuries that I don't need more.
Yeah.
So
rule number one, live to train tomorrow.
There's no point in really pushing through a panic like that.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes it's a real risk, right? Like if things are going bad and your body is telling you like that's kind of hard to discern sometimes when you're, well, at least for me, I shouldn't speak for you, but I know sometimes in my head, my brain will be like your shoulder, your elbow, your back, your knee, like it'll just like run through the list of things that hurt, because you know, old football injuries and what have you, but sometimes it's real and sometimes it's not, but like I'm old enough. I know what's real and what's not. I've got enough sets under my belt. Is that the same for you, or like do you get that feedback, or do you only get it when it's legit?
I get a mixture of the two, but similarly I've come to figure out like this specific pain, not good. Let's stop, versus you can probably push through this one or that one, or you know, it also depends. I mean, the bigger context, right? What am I doing? Am I doing a training set? Am I doing a world championship? Right? Like there's a different scale there of what's worth pushing through and when.
Yeah.
Those are not the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That is, I will say that is one qualifier that I put onto rule number one is live to train tomorrow. That is specific to practice, right? I have told people it is okay to push yourself to the fringes or to risk injury in competition, because that's just the nature of the competition, but that's up to them as an athlete. Yeah. Like I'm never going to tell somebody. Like
what is that competition and larger competition schedule?
Yes.
Right. Like if you're going to compete again in 2 months, you also want to be able to do that hopefully.
Oh, and it's always up to the person. I've never told somebody like keep going if they're risking injury or anything like that. But you know, there have been people that have pushed to the fringes of their capabilities and had repercussions from that, myself included. And that's okay if it's in competition and it's an important competition, if you're okay with it. But It's, we never want to do that in practice. That's the, cause there's always another, there's always another training set coming. There's always another, we can always adjust there. So, speaking of world championships, what are your goals now for, as you get back into it, in the coming months, you've achieved at a really high level in this sport already. So, what are you wanting to focus on for the next,
my main goal for this year is to actually complete and compete in a 20 kilogram triathlon, which I haven't done since 2019.
Just going to go ahead and write that one down.
Better late than never. I keep signing up for it, keep having to drop my bell weights because life happens. But I'm actually going to do it this year. I currently don't have any like competition goal in terms of I want to get to that competition or qualify for this team or anything like that. That's just, I want my lifting to get back to a place where I'm content with it. And then if that seems like the direction I want to go in terms of like looking at a qualifier, I will, but that's not what's driving me at this point. And also, for better or worse, the timing of the qualifiers don't really cooperate well with my work schedule anymore. So it's not like it's something that's like, oh, I could so do that if I just qualified for it. It would be a lot of other pulls on life.
Yeah. To make that happen. Kind of a big deal to have to leave work for several days and go qualify and then travel somewhere else around the world and all of those things. Well, I think a 20 kilogram 10 minute triathlon is it's a fairly robust goal. I think that's pretty salty. So I think we can work on that. There's plenty of work to do there. That's pretty exciting.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And is there a rank that you want to hit on that, or is it just finish the 10 minutes on all three lifts? Or
right now it's finish the triathlon. I'd love to finish that 10 minute snatch set. Although that one will always be my nemesis. I want to compete and be happy with it. It's little ambiguous, but you've said to me a couple times, you could probably go up there and still do it. And I'm like, we both said, not at paces that I want to be lifting at with those bells. So I'm not putting numbers on it at the moment. It's just, I want to do it and be happy with it, be confident that I can get up there and do it, have it be a good weekend all around before and after doing that lift.
Fair enough. All right. Well, the coup de grace question is always going to be giving advice to a new lifter, right? What would you tell somebody that's new in this sport, as somebody who's achieved at a high level and been at it for a fair amount of years? What would you tell a new lifter who's getting into this sport now?
It does take time. And definitely record yourself at the beginning so that in 2 to 3 years you can look back and watch that. It will help. And start light and start slow and focus on the technique. You have nothing to prove with a heavier bell until you have mastered it with the lighter bells. It's really just not worth it. You'll definitely hurt yourself if you're trying to jump up and wait too quickly. And so take the time to figure it out with the lighter bells.
I love it. All right. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on. I'm going to be respectful of time. And I know we both have other things we have to get back to work to do. We're recording this in the middle of our work days. Although you don't have to go back to work yet today, right? You're still
I have to go back to work on Monday.
But you've got a little bit of curriculum design to do. So enjoy that. Thank you so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. And thank you for being my first ever client. And thank you for still trusting me to coach you. I'm really looking forward to this year. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Same. Thanks, Jordan.
Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Platform Podcast. We'll be back with a new episode soon. Please be sure to leave a rating and review of the Platform Podcast in your app of choice. Support our work by supporting our affiliates. And of course, if you have questions or you want help reaching your goals, reach out to me. Until next time, thanks for listening.